When I imagine this exchange, I imagine it unfolding on a dimlit stage, a red London telephone box in the background, two small bubbular studies shimmering at opposing ends, the round watery edges plastered in portraits, one of Lionel Barber, chief editor of the Financial Times, the other, Nursultan Nazarbayev, president of Kazakhstan. Aside the respective portraits in their respective studies, two maps float on the interior, both silken. To the left, a map floats beside Barber's mouth with the city of Cairo at its centre and a series of strings stretching to Canberra, Brasilia, Istanbul, Naypyidaw and Astana. This is the Silk Road of green and red lights, rising and falling, and all with the great ancient city of Cairo at its helm, pulling. In the bubbled study to the right, a different map of a different scale floats, with the city of Astana at its centre, and a single string stretching vertically to Almaty. This is the Silk Road of deep dwellings and seismic faults. The exchange begins. Act 1. A smartly dressed individual, between gravitating and poring over the map of Cairo, bursts comparatively, stammers out a short letter. Minutes pass. The letter concludes and is sent out to the audience world to read. An interval proceeds. Act 2. A smartly dressed individual, between gravitating and poring over the map of Astana, bursts comparatively, stammers out a short, incredulous response. Minutes pass. The letter concludes and is sent out to the audience world to read. An interval proceeds. Act 3. The studies rise, then begin to dissolve into the wings of the stage, and a sole panorama is left projecting. It is of Astana in evening light, a bright thread of golden road stretching into the horizon. The panorama bubble shrinks and grows and begins to distend into smaller and smaller bubbles. Flickers of Cairo, Canberra, Brasilia, Istanbul, Naypyidaw, Almaty, greens, golds, reds, crackle in polychrome static. Astana foams. Act 4. The two opposing bubbled studies begin to shimmer in, adjoining the fabric of inflationary bubbles they gave. Astana panorama rotates its implosional centrefold, shimmering. Astana 1. The exchange begins with an editorial published on December 27, 2017, in the infrastructure investment section of the FT. When a national capital becomes a vanity project, there are worrying precedents to Egypt's plan for a new megacity. The article goes on to trace Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's plans to build a new administrative capital in the desert. Of course there can, the article states, be good reasons to attempt a transplant of government. When Australia opted to build its capital on the site of Canberra, the reasons included security from naval attack, climate, and above all a wish to prevent either Sydney or Melbourne dominating the new federation. Brasilia was founded with similar aims of sharing resources and influence across a large country. It was also planned on utopian principles, from the aeroplane-shaped design declaring Brazil to be modern and global, to the residential blocks intended to promote social equality. Yet for Egypt, and for most Egyptians at this present time, prioritising a vast military-led construction project while the country grapples with rising inflation and worsening militant violence might look like an attempt to bury heads in the sand. The article goes on, and this is where it gets interesting. Al-Sisi might draw some useful lessons from countries that have tried similar experiments, from Australia, Brazil or Turkey, to more recently Kazakhstan and Myanmar. There is a fine line between creating a national showcase and pursuing a vanity project with ample scope for corruption that may offer a less flattering reflection of an autocratic regime. The decision by Kazakhstan's leader, Nursultan Nazarbayev, to abandon Almaty for a hastily built capital on the country's empty northern steppe had some strategic merit to fend off Russian claims to the territory. But the result, Astana, is bizarre. Dotted with structures commissioned from international architects, but conceived by the president and plastered with his portrait, from a shopping mall shaped like a nomad's tent, to a tower that references Kazakh folklore. Astana 2. The rebuke emerges 1 week later in a letter from Erlan Idrisov, ambassador of Kazakhstan to the UK. Sir, your editorial, When a National Capital Becomes a Vanity Project, asserts, without any supporting evidence, that Astana, the capital city of Kazakhstan, is a vanity project with ample scope for corruption, plastered with the president's portrait. The truth is different. The decision in 1997 to establish the new Kazakh capital in the central part of the country was based on genuine security concerns. Almaty sits on a seismologically active zone very close to the country's eastern border. The founding of the new capital, Astana, moreover, offered post-independence Kazakhstan an opportunity to make a clean break from its Soviet past as a dumping ground for political prisoners and entire peoples despised by Stalin, and later as a Cold War test area for more than 500 nuclear weapons. In 1999, Astana had a population of 281,000. By 2007, it had doubled to 600,000. Today, more than 1 million people live in the city, which is still growing fast and boasts a beautiful state-of-the-art opera house, among many other things. This is not the trajectory of a vanity project. Kazakhs are immensely proud of this extraordinary achievement, led by President Nursultan Nazarbayev, but suggest that the city is enthralled to a cult of his personality is as absurd as drawing a similar conclusion from the presence of a statue to Sir Winston Churchill in London's Parliament Square. Astana is a fitting symbol for the future potential of Kazakhstan. Its hosting of Expo 2017 saw 115 states, 22 international organisations, and more than 4 million visitors come together on the vitally important theme of future energy. I sincerely hope that many of your readers also will come to share our wonder at the emergence of this remarkable city on the steppe. A bar. Three writers meet in a bar following the play's conclusion. Astana shimmers in the back of their minds. The youngest one, Foucault, turns to Stengers as Sloterdijk orders free drinks. Strange play. Why do the two authors come to different conclusions on Astana? And which one is true? The bizarre, gaudy, dotted one, plastered in portrait, or the beautiful, state-of-the-art, home to a thriving population? Stengers replies, how can we present a proposal, or a play for that matter, not to say what is, or what ought to be, but to provoke thought, a proposal that requires no other verification than the way in which it is able to slow down reasoning and create an opportunity to arouse a slightly different awareness of the problems and situations mobilizing us? Foucault rubs his brow-lined glasses. I agree, certainly to some extent. The essential political problem for the play-watcher is that of ascertaining a new politics of truth. The problem is not changing people's consciousness of what's in their heads, but the political, economic, intuitional regime of the production of truth. It's not a matter of emancipating truth from MB's system of power, which would be a chimera, for truth is already power, but of detaching the power of truth from the forms of hegemony, social, economic, and cultural, within which it operates at the present time. Stengers opens her mouth to speak, but Foucault is flowing lucid. When I dream of the Silk Roads, I dream about a kind of criticism that would try not to judge, but to bring an oeuvre, a book, a sentence, an idea to life. It would light fires, watch the grass grow, listen to the wind, and catch the sand foam in the breeze and scatter it. It would multiply not judgments, but signs of existence. It would summon them, drag them from their sleep. Perhaps it would invent them sometimes, all the better. Criticism that hands down sentences sends me to sleep. I'd like a criticism of scintillating leaps of imagination. It would not be sovereign or dressed in red. It would hear the lightning of possible storms. Three orbs. Sloterdijk returns with three brimming orbed glasses from the bar. How much truth is contained in something can be best determined by making it thoroughly laughable and then watching to see how much joking around it can take. The truth is a matter that can withstand mockery, that is freshened by any ironic gesture directed at it. Whatever cannot withstand satire is false. When I think of the New Silk Road, which ostensibly this play is about, remarkably foam is the metaphor. Foam offers a theory of the present age from the perspective that life unfolds multifocally, multi-perspectively, and heterarchically. In the foam, discrete and polyvalent games of reason must develop that learn to live with a shimmering diversity of perspectives and dispense with the illusion of one lordly point of view. Foucault, I think I overheard you from the bar speaking of dreams. Foucault nods. If I may add, if we observe the countless small cultures that arose from the primordial world up until historical times, watching this swarm of shimmering bubbles filled with languages, rites, and projects spouting out and bursting, and if we can, in select cases, watch as they float further, grow and rule. One wonders how it can be that everything was not blown away by the wind. The vast majority of older clans, tribes and peoples disappeared almost without a trace into a sort of nothingness, in some cases leaving behind at least a name and some obscure cult object. Of the millions of tiny ethnospheres that have drifted over the earth, only a fraction have survived through metamorphoses based on enlarging, self-securing, and positing power symbols. When we think of the New Silk Roads, these enlarging, self-securing spheres of influence are never far from one's dreams. So the orb has imploded. Now the foams are alive. The barman interjects at this point in a soft Franco-Dublin accent. We're all Astanas now, pulled, pushed, shaken from the seismic ground, waiting for Gabordo, and what help or lessness it holds. What can I get you? Three more of the same? Foucault nods.